1. The Disappearing Visionary. June 2008. For a company at the epicenter of American business and culture, Apple's headquarters couldn't have been located in a more forgettable place. An hour's drive south of San Francisco, the campus was situated deep in Silicon Valley and Cupertino, a quiet suburb where technology companies coexisted with relatively modest residential homes, big box retailers, and chain restaurants like TGI Fridays. As cities go, Cupertino was nondescript. It didn't have a downtown to speak of, nor did it have a major shopping mall. Many of Apple's employees preferred to live in San Francisco, so the company ran luxury commuter buses for them with wireless internet and leather seats. Every weekday morning, the buses rolled down Interstate 280 alongside the Santa Cruz Mountains to arrive at De Anza Boulevard. Occasionally, Jobs would be spotted cutting off other drivers as he turned onto the campus road in his silver Mercedes-Benz convertible. His car stood out because it had no license plate. Apple's many offices were sprinkled throughout the area. The iTunes team inhabited buildings on Valley Green Drive. The marketing and communications department worked out of a large office on Mariani Avenue. Passersby would not know that a building belonged to Apple unless they happened to spot the discreet sign with a small Apple logo. That is, if it had a sign at all. It was only after visitors turned into a side street to the east of De Anza, behind BJ's restaurant and brewhouse, that they could see a group of six buildings that together formed Apple's main oval-shaped campus. It was Cupertino's most famous address, One Infinite Loop. The four-story buildings, labeled IL1 through 6, looked mostly the same from the outside, concrete boxes with plenty of windows that gave them a clean, open feel. But the interiors were designed by different architects to give each building its own personality. IL2, which housed the iPhone software team, had a 1990s-style postmodern look with angles and curves. The industrial design studio, which shared part of the building, had a sleek interior with frosted glass and stainless steel. IL6, where the operations team resided, was more classic and subdued. The names of meeting rooms in each of the buildings reflected Apple's playful culture. The developer relations team in IL3 named their rooms after evangelists like Tammy Faye and Pat Robertson. The product marketing team called theirs Here, There, and North by Northwest. The iPhone software team's rooms were tongue-in-cheek. Between was literally flanked by two rooms called Rock and A Hard Place. What the buildings had in common was that they forced people to interact. Offices were lined with windows. Hallways opened up into common spaces. The floor plan made it impossible not to bump into other teams. Longtime Apple employees swore that these informal encounters were part of the secret to its success because they fostered collaboration. The first building that one saw when driving onto campus was IL1, also known as Steve's Building. Part of the ground floor was occupied by the company store, where Apple devotees could buy t-shirts that said, "I visited the mothership." If they looked past the lime green sign with the number 1 and the manicured evergreen hedge out front, they would see employees hanging out in an airy glass atrium. The executive offices were on the top floor, but access was restricted. Jobs occupied a corner office facing the quad. It contained a huge desk, a couple of chairs, a sofa, coffee table, and a credenza. Piles of books, papers, and random items that people sent to him were strewn everywhere. It was so functional and devoid of character that executives who had spent time there struggled to describe it. Jobs didn't care what his office looked like. He was hardly ever there. He met most people in the boardroom by the floor entrance or in the conference room next to his office. Otherwise, he'd usually be walking around, hanging out with Ive, or visiting the industrial design studio, where there were always interesting projects and prototypes to look at. Jobs loved the studio. It was one of the reasons he had it moved some years ago from the other side of De Anza Boulevard to IL2, right next door to him. One morning that summer, Jobs was sitting in the front row of Town Hall, Apple's auditorium, doing one of the things he did best, terrifying others into outperforming themselves. The Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple's annual meeting for developers, was coming up soon, and he was there to watch the rehearsals.